Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to The Drill Down. We've got business stories behind stocks on a move. I'm Corey Johnson with episode number 169. Well, just ahead, how pet toy retailer Chewy is navigating a post-COVID puppy world. And is there any way for retailer Express to right the ship? And looking at the cloud and expense cutting with Coupa CEO Rod Bernstein right ahead of earnings. But first, it's sponsor time.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. Never miss another critical event or insight ever with Era. Customize your company watch lists and track key events, mentions, filings, and more, all within an easy-to-use, customizable interface. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And you can listen to The Drill Down in so many ways, but the best way to listen to The Drill Down is all the time, made easier by subscribing. So click the subscribe button and follow us on your favorite podcast network.
And The Drill Down is brought to you by Brain Trust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Brain Trust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit braintrust.com, that's BRAINTRUST.com, to learn more.
I'm Corey Johnson. Welcome to The Drill Down. We've got business stories, not just wiggly lines of stock chart movement. No, we're going to tell you how these businesses work. I'm going to do that with the help of executive producer Isaac Webster. Isaac.
Hey, Corey.
So I want to get right to it. You ready?
What stocks are you drilling down on today?
Start with Chewy.
Chewy. Chewy trades under CHWY. Shares have fallen 61% over the past 12 months. Currently trading around $34 a share with a 52-week high of $91.
Yeah, so this stock taking it on the chin here. This company supplies toys and dog food and things for pets. I've had the misfortune of talking to someone at an animal shelter recently in great detail. And what I found out and sort of fact-checked when I looked at the Chewy results were that dog shelters, so many people adopted dogs during COVID. They adopted pets during COVID. The pet ownership, it was literally hard to find certain pets to adopt, certainly the purebreds and the puppy mills and so on. We're selling out left, right, and center. Well, a lot of those people found out they didn't want to have a dog, or they couldn't handle a dog, or they are getting evicted from their apartments now that evictions are legal again, and they're losing the ability to keep these pets. And so the shelters are absolutely overwhelmed. It's a horrible situation. I visited the Milo Foundation's offices here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and while I was there on Saturday, they adopted about 15 dogs that day.
Really?
Lots of people adopting dogs, but they've got more than they can handle.
And how does that compare to times past, pre-COVID?
Unfortunately, they've always been busy, but they really are overwhelmed right now, and they do think that it has something to do with this snapback from people just not able to handle the pets they acquired during COVID. And some of the stories are worse, right? You know, the dogs left by the side of the road or found in left abandoned in parks and so on. It's just awful. And I strongly encourage people, I'm giving money to the Milo Foundation. I encourage other people to do the same, whether it's your local animal shelter or call the Milo Foundation here in the Bay Area, and they could use the help. But I thought it was interesting to look at the results from Chewy in that context. Now, they're trying to put lipstick on the pig. We've got a lot of that in today's show. Companies describing things as lovely. Maybe they're pigs as pets too. I don't know. Also a bad idea. You can't handle it. But in any case, these guys are referring to it now as the COVID disruption and the cohorts from the COVID period. In other words, people that got pets, they didn't keep the pets or aren't going to keep the pets. And they're talking about things snapping back. The problem with this company's really had is keeping customers. Customers come and use their product and bolt. And I think one of the things that's not really being said here is people just aren't keeping their pets. That like in the last couple of years during COVID, like pet owners have typically behaved when they get a pet and keep a pet for a long time. So when they talk here about the COVID disruption and the COVID cohort, I think what CFO Mario Marte is talking about really here is people who just are getting rid of their pets, and that's screwing up the business for Chewy. Here's Mario Marte.
And I'll tell you, when we expect to lap the COVID disruption, so go back to the way we've explained our customer retention over time. Most of the attrition that happens in our cohorts, period, no matter when we acquire them, happen year one into year two. And why is that? Is because in the first year that they join the platform, they're counted as active customers the entire time, even if they don't return to make a purchase. So we see the first effect 1 year out after their first purchase. There's also another step, year two to year three, because they may have come back throughout the first year, and they get counted through their second year, or at least 1 year from their last purchase. Let's call it that way. So if you think about the 2020 cohort, and by the way, after 2 years with us, they tend to stay with us for a very long time, and we can go back cohort after cohort, year after year, and see the same pattern over time. So if you think about the 2020 cohort, which would have been the first COVID cohort, those customers are now have lapped 2 years with us. The first year is 2020, second year 2021. So now we're starting to see sort of this is what we're saying, they're stabilizing, their retention stabilizing over time. 2021, they're in the middle of their second year. They counted all last year, they're in the middle of the second year. So we're going to see that their stability, and we're starting to see some signals from there as well. As we get out of this year and into 2023.
So stability for this business might mean a much smaller business.
Yeah. And I mean, they're in a tough business. I mean, I'm a pet owner no offense, but the Chewy model doesn't really, appeal to me. I like to go to the pet store, to find the things that I feel like my dog is going to like. And the subscription model for Chewy doesn't really, I imagine there's a lot of pet owners like me that aren't going to even try out Chewy.
I think that when we see what the post-COVID, having your pet toy sent to you when the pet stores were closed because of quarantine made a lot of sense. You had a brand new pet. Were doing everything online. You started buying the stuff online.
Yeah, you had to, right? Yeah.
I think that the way that people do everything in the post-quarantine, post-COVID world, we're starting to see that hit certain businesses, and we're hearing that in some of these conference calls, and you're certainly seeing that with Chewy.
Corey, what is your next drill down?
I want to look at the retailer Express.
Express trades under EXPR, and shares have dropped 23% over the past week and dropped over 73% in a year. In fact, just over a year ago, EXPR Express shares touched $7 a share, but they're now trading at $1.50.
Yeah, horrible decline in market cap from about, and we normally don't look at companies this small. Company about 100 million market cap now, was a 600 million market cap company in January. So really brutal times for Express, having a real hard time of managing inventory, managing supply chain, getting fashion trends right. Isaac, how would you describe the clothing at Express? Come on, don't be nice.
I never am. Actually, I try to always be. I mean, listen, I feel like Express. They try very hard to...
Jesus, that is trying hard to be nice.
No, they try very hard to be a competitor in the fast casual landscape, up against Zara, H&M.
H&M, yeah.
And they try to differentiate themselves, I think, with more of what they consider a more sophisticated look that's even leans on like an Armani exchange, but they've never quite...
Kind of failing. For men and women.
Yeah, I don't know. Like they had a moment. I remember they had a moment when I was a child, but maybe that's because I lived in the Midwest.
You were a child a long time ago, Isaac. Come on.
A very long time ago. I don't know. Express, I'm always amazed that they're still around.
Yeah, well, they're increasingly Express, less around. And once again, putting lipstick on the pig for these guys. But really, the business is really struggling. And I think that when you look at their results, what you see is a company that's talking about the little things they're doing to improve. But I think that what was interesting also is trying to manage inventory while you're trying to capture in an extraordinarily difficult time to do so, right? Where you've,
yeah,
it's where companies overordered because they couldn't get product a year ago. Now they're getting too much product, but they're still not sure what they're going to get and when they're going to get it. At the same time, they're trying to land a fashion trend At the same time, their customers' lives are totally changing and going back to work, kids going back to school, sometimes for the first time. I saw someone in our office today bringing their little kid, and I was thinking about all my friends who've got little kids where there's one COVID infection, they shut down the classroom.
Yeah. I've gone through that so many times.
You've dealt with that so often.
Yeah. So it's tough.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think when we look at Express, what we're seeing here is a company that's trying to land a 747 on a small aircraft carrier and maybe not pulling it off. Listen to CEO Tim Baxter talking about what's going on in Express, their falling revenues, and trying to capture these trends as they're happening.
We have seen, as I said, improvement in each of the last few weeks. And I do think that we are certainly seeing, as women in particular have gotten kids back to school, they are now shifting into that mindset of going back to work. We also are, seeing and hearing about many companies who are actually going back to work, at least part-time, some full-time, in the office following Labor Day. So I think, we're beginning to see that. I also think that, as Matt mentioned earlier, while modern tailoring was great for us in women's in the second quarter, we didn't actually have enough of it. As we've moved into August and certainly as we move into September, our inventory in those key categories also grows. And I think, that's also been a part of that improvement that we've seen.
So he's not crazy talking about an improvement. I mean, when you look at this company a year and a half ago, their trailing revenues were about $1.2 billion. Now they're almost $2 billion. But, increasingly they're just missing the trends and they're missing the opportunity to get those customers where they're at while they're wrestling with inventories. It's been a real problem for Express, and you see that reflected in the stock price.
As an armchair observant person of this company, I've always thought of Express as like not quite hitting the nail on the head on who is your customer? What do they want? What is their lifestyle like? How are you catering to that? I've never felt, I think they had a moment, but you can even go to their website and look, and it's like this is sort of business casual meets work cocktails. Is that, and it's really for like a, first job out of college type of client.
Work cocktails. Where do you work? Once upon a time, at Time Magazine, they used to have a bar cart that go down the hallway and serve beverages to everybody during the working evening, during the close of the magazine.
Was that like in 1930 or?
That was about, literally it was 1930. I think that continued on until the 60s or 70s, but yes. Work
Very
drinks.
Mad Men.
Yeah, but maybe as relevant as Express.
Yeah, exactly. Corey, what is your next drill down?
I want to look at one more company that's on the smaller side, about $500 million market cap, but I think really important and interesting to us right now. Rex American Resources, the pride of Dayton, Ohio.
Rex American Resources trades under Rex, REX, and shares have tumbled 10% over the past week, but they have gained 5% over the past 12 months, currently trading around $8 below their 52-week high of $38.
So this company is an odd one, but I thought it was interesting to sort of hear where, we mentioned this concept briefly last week, but when times turn bad, companies find every excuse under the sun to explain what's happening with their business, even when their business isn't doing so great. Now, Rex, to be clear, has also seen its revenues increase substantially over the last few years on a trailing basis, about $850 million over the last year. The company, I should look back up a minute, they sell ethanol. And they get corn, they refine and make ethanol, and they also sell some of the byproducts. But on their conference call, I couldn't even list all the excuses that they had for their guidance and for the results. At least it sounded like excuses to me. They were complaining that there's not enough corn and there's not enough ethanol sales and there's not enough ethanol refineries for sale at a good price. And there aren't enough meetings they can have with White House officials and there aren't enough trains to move their stuff and there aren't enough dogs to eat their homework. I mean, this went on and on and on. Listen to Zafar Rizvi. Zafar Rizvi, what do you think? That wasn't nice. We're not doing a nice show. We're doing a real show.
Zafar Rizvi, totally. I just thought you were funny.
The CEO of Rex American Resources.
I think I'm going to speak generally, not specifically each location, but I think what we're finding is that railroad really is not functioning properly. they suddenly we have seen in some cases that we have train is ready to pick up, or and they're supposed to pick up on Friday, but they will not be there up to next Friday or next even Sunday. So they are delaying 7, 7, 8, 8, 9, 9 days. And so I think basically what they are continuously telling us that they have shortage of crews and workers, and they cannot find drivers, and that causing the further delay. And I think one thing which I really is carry on stressing in other people that, you know, as long as railroad has a semi-monopoly, that nobody else comes to their train track unless they pay a huge switching fee. As President Biden said previously, that switching fee is causing delays and transportation problems. Unless really federal government look at crews closely to eliminate that, switching fee and let every train company, railroad company, to switch each other and pay the freight, and they will be easily switch the track without any extra charges. I think that will certainly will increase logistic problem, that it will save a lot of hassle, because now we are dependent only one railroad. If they don't have drivers, then we stuck. But we don't have any choice to call somebody else to come and pick up our freight and loaded cars, and that certainly is a major problem.
So that was just kind of a sample of, you know, blaming the railroad, blaming President Biden. They did talk a lot about carbon capture and a potential of getting into that business and digging some holes they thought could work for carbon capture someday. I think this could be an interesting one to watch, but that may be more amusing than profitable. Who knows? I wish them luck.
I wish them luck too. And I also, I don't know, when you bring up ethanol, I just think of like 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Yeah. Subsidies. Very important there. All right. Well, coming up next, we're going to take a look at an interesting company in the expense management business. Of course, who doesn't want to cut expenses at their corporation? Coupa is a company that helps businesses do that through software, and that's controlling enormous purchasing power in the corporate world right now and growing fast and about to report earnings. But ahead of that, we've got Coupa CEO Rob Bernstein joining us right after this.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Brain Trust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Brain Trust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit braintrust.com. That's BRAINTRUST.com to learn more.
All right, welcome back to the Drill Down podcast. As promised, we're joined right now by Rob Bernstein, the CEO of Coupa. Coupa Software, Coupa, just Coupa, Rob. Is that right?
Just Coupa.
I usually fact check this with a 10K in front of me. The 10K window is closed right now. So we've talked in the past. Tell us kind of quickly, what does Coupa do? A business spend software doesn't roll right off the tongue, but how do you describe what Coupa does?
Well, we help companies of virtually any size around the world optimize every dollar of their spending, make sure that that dollar is going to the right suppliers, make sure that they get the best deals, make sure that they're able to maintain agility with all their cash and expenditures, and give visibility and insight to their spending the way that we as consumers love to have when we look into our own wallets on a daily basis.
And it's more than just procurement software.
Oh, much more than that. We began in the procurement area, but we expanded the last 13 years of our growth to include all methods of spend. So your invoicing, your actual payments against expenditures in real time, your expenses and your travel and bookings. So we now oversee nearly $4 trillion in spending for our nearly 3,000 customers around the world, and helping them optimize that their expenditures.
Yeah, I find that metric that you guys release in your quarterlies is a really interesting one in terms of the spending that you control. So is that spending that actually goes through the platform, or is that sort of beyond that, or spending that's sort of influenced by the platform?
No, it's literally spending that goes through the platform. Every penny, every euro, every dollar, across virtually every currency and supported by virtually every language around the world. That's going through our system.
And it's, you know, while COVID has been tough and you guys guided down in the Wall Street parlance in terms of the expectation of growth, the growth numbers are still pretty impressive. I mean, you know, at least to me, well over 20% annual growth on the top line is great, I think, even though it's not the 30 or 40% that you might have put up in earlier years.
Well, look, we think this is a huge total addressable market, nearly $100 billion as a market of business spend management. And our challenge and our journey for the last 13 years and going forward is to develop this category within this large total addressable market to meet the needs of companies large and small around the world. And just this morning, Corey, I was on the phone with a prospective customer that's using an AS400 system still in their in IT environment to make sense of spend. And you know, they're obviously at risk. Their users are frustrated. They don't have visibility. They're not getting the best deal. So
that stuff's, you know, still out there?
Absolutely.
I remember covering, I'm old, I remember covering Y2K and just being amazed at how many old computing systems were at really big companies running really critical infrastructure. Maybe not the stuff that was the cutting edge of what these companies were doing, but really were the backbone of these companies. And I guess you're still seeing that.
That's right. That's right. We're either going into greenfield environments or we're upgrading from older legacy systems. But in every case, we're unlocking this incredible visibility into the company's expenditures and helping them optimize.
I was listening to some comments by your chief marketing officer at a recent financial conference, Bank of America conference, and he had this great line about the behavior of chief financial officers during the pandemic, and that in some cases the CFO was the CF no in terms of companies wanting to make these big changes and do these software implementations at a time of crisis, that being COVID. One could have looked at, and I think a lot of people did look at the pandemic as a time when everyone wanted to cut expenses and therefore would adopt Coupa software. And while some did, some didn't. And like, as I mentioned, you have seen a big slowdown in your growth rate, still a growth rate that most people would take. What's going on right now that would be different than the pandemic? Because now, you know, now the concern isn't the pandemic as much. The concern is a potential recession in the future or in the present moment. And that's, you know, as I suggested, the CFOs don't need much of an excuse to not spend money on new projects.
Well, what we're seeing in a lot of parts of the world is that many of those digital transformation projects that were part of the kind of CFO equation during a very acute phase of COVID have now come back online, and folks are realizing that if they need to prepare for the resiliency they'll need to have in a potential recessionary environment, they'll need to have visibility into their expenditures. They'll need to be able to dynamically control expenditures, stop them, reroute them to the right places, manage their supply chain agility, which we help them do as well. So we're seeing a lot of those projects come back online and they're being initiated. Now, you always have a push and pull, Corey, where, you know, spend to save is an element of this equation. But the kind of savings numbers we've been able to generate for our customers around the world and the referenceability we have now in that area and beyond is really, really strong. So we're seeing initiatives around business spend management arriving higher in the stack of priority than, you know, many of the other digital transformation agendas that we see in enterprise software, which bodes well for us.
So why the guide down then?
Well, first of all, we're operating at a completely different scale than we were even entering COVID. Just to give you a sense, you know, we had roughly 1,100, 1,200 people when COVID hit. We're well over 3,000 people today all over the world. Our revenue run rate is significantly larger than it was when we entered into COVID. When there is a slowdown that happens
trailing 12 months, what, $750 million or so in top line for you guys?
Something like that. I don't want to quote exactly, Corey, but something along those lines. If we're operating roughly $800 million or so, which you know, the 90% is recurring. But what I wanted to explain is that when you go through a period when there is a slowdown during COVID, to reaccelerate back to levels that you were at before takes a certain period of time, and it doesn't happen, you know, in one quarter of recovery. So we're thoughtfully investing into that. We're also incredibly thoughtful about our cash flow and Rule of 40 and all the other sales and marketing efficiency measures that we look at, our margins. So we can easily tune our own business based on how the marketplace is developing within our total addressable market to push and pull based on that.
What are you hearing from customers? We've talked a little bit on the show in recent episodes about how the notion of recession can be, with the executives, kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. And even saying the word out loud, it's like conjuring the demons of a slowdown. I wonder what you're hearing from your customers and what you're seeing in terms of their eagerness to spend. Well, obviously, some of them get it. And obviously, more of them get it because you still got growth. But
sure. No, they get it. I think what's happening is we're in a very unprecedented time in 2022 here today, in the sense that information is becoming more and more perfect with each day. And when I get up on a certain morning and the market is up and sentiment is more positive, the conversations during that day are influenced by the starting point of that morning. Similarly, on the other side of it. So
isn't
we're living
awful?
In very unprecedented.
Don't you wish people could just turn the CNBC off for a minute and stop getting so excited about anything that's happening on a given? When I was building a house years ago and I was trading full time, I would come home and you could walk through the house years later and see the days that I had a good day in the market, the days that I had a bad day in the market, because there were electric blinds in the rooms where I was doing well. And then you go into the bathroom and there are the crank blinds you got to use your hands with, because those are them. No, stop spending. And the next day I'd come back and tell the contractor, start spending. Just what a moron I am. But it sounds like your customers are the same.
Well, yes. But having said that, as we've seen in the past, when there is a lot of stop-start activity, eventually people realize they have to zoom out and look more broadly. And when you look at the more broader picture around our category, there's a huge opportunity. The customers are frustrated and suffering whatever solutions they have. And we have something that we think is really special. So it's a question of, that broader arc of our engagement with one another.
What is the sales process like for you now, and how has that changed? I know you did an in-person user conference for the first time in many years, and other companies are starting to see that too. And does that change your sales process? Does it help you share the stories in a more effective way?
It does. The user conference does, but it also works within our system. We don't have any barriers between customers within our system. We have customers sharing insights with one another, practitioners in given categories of spend, cross company, right there within Coupa. So we've been building this community of spend management professionals now for nearly a decade and a half, and their referenceability and their best practices sharing and their insights within that community cultivates a large portion of our growth.
So do you find you've got people who are experts on Coupa and have used it at one company and take that to another company because they're sort of the Coupa guru and can sort of maintain that as a job skill, not just a skill for their corporation?
Absolutely. I think the record now is 6 times. So one individual has deployed Coupa, been involved in a Coupa deployment at 6 different companies over the course of the last decade and a half. And it's a lot of movement, but this is an individual has really become an expert. We've had a number of CFOs that have used this at 2 to 3 companies now. So absolutely. This is, we're building a recurring revenue business. We're building a business where we want to keep our customers forever. And so that it works really well for us to make sure that customers get value and then are willing to talk about it and share it broadly.
And you've done a bunch of acquisitions in recent years as well.
We have. We started our, call it acquisition muscle, something like 10 years ago, initially with smaller acqui-hires than companies that are, a little bit bigger. And we're always looking for either a team that we could put onto our platform to help us develop code faster and get more products out, or a starting point of a certain product that we think we could really tighten up, make highly configurable, deploy best practices components into it, and get it out to our customer base. Only solutions that are really ancillary to what we do, but build out the space of business spend management. And so far, those have gone very well.
Yeah, you guys also boast a lot about user experience. Not being a user of this software, I'll have to take you on your word at that. Of course, every company says they've got great user experience. And I know I've kicked a couple of computers. I just kicked mine right now. But not necessarily a reflection on Squadcast, which we use to make the podcast. But I wonder, with that complexity, as you add more and more features, keeping that user experience simple and clean, it's going to be a constant struggle.
That's an incredible question, but it's grounded in our strategy.
That's one in a row for me. That's one in a row.
Well, let me address that, because it's part and parcel of our strategy as a company. We have a 3-wave strategy. Wave one is to make all the end user transactional spending highly usable for everything as it pertains to procurement, invoicing, pay, expenses. That has remained on one organic, clean, beautiful code line with minimal lines of code for incredible value. That has been organic. What we've bought have been what we call power user applications, applications that are used by an expert user that may be in that application the entire day. For example, advanced sourcing applications or supply chain design applications. Those applications have a different user interface. It's significantly more complicated, but those individuals actually trained and working in that environment. So we bought the things that help unlock value out of transactional spend and built in those things in some cases, but we've stayed completely clean, organic in our transactional core.
As you do acquisitions and acqui-hires, is that something that's still necessary to do? Are we in a different place with tech employment right now? We've seen more in technology than any other aspect of the economy. We've seen a couple of companies kind of let some people go or slow down their hiring in the case of Apple and others. And I wonder if the hiring picture has changed for you being based in Silicon Valley and hiring those, you know, the going after those engineers that everyone else is going after. Or was going after.
The good news for us is we've always been a global company. As I mentioned, you know, nearly 3,500 people around the world. I'm sitting in our headquarters right now, and we only have a couple hundred people here. So we have developers all over the world. We have a full follow the sun model for support all over the world. We have sales and marketing professionals all over the world, services professionals all over the world. So yes, there are certain pockets where we're certainly affected, but generally we have a really nice distribution there, so we don't have as much of a risk as it pertains to talent acquisition as maybe some companies that are overly reliant on the Valley.
It's been interesting to look at the city of San Francisco, where our our offices are here, and just how dead it is downtown. How few companies have returned. I think the last statistic I saw was less than 40% of the employees were badging in than had been pre-pandemic.
I bet. That doesn't surprise me at all.
But are you seeing that as, is that good for your business? More people being remote, more workers being remote? Does it make any difference at all?
Well, first, let me say, when we set up this business, when we got going 2009 and 10, I made sure that all of our offices were set up in a way where the office was just, a place you could go or not go, right? I mean, you had access to what you needed through your windows, whether they be your phone or they be your laptop or desktop, whatever it may be. So we actually were able to improve our deployment times by roughly a month because people were remote. They didn't have to do all the travel. So we were always set up to be that way. But of course, you can't take away the value of person-to-person physical interaction. So now we're doing a lot of different things in our offices where we'll have people in for certain collaborative events, or in some cases, people would work out of the office a few days a week. We're very flexible in that regard. We're not pushing people in, nor are we suggesting that never meeting in person again is the way to go. And that's working well for us. It's working well for our business.
Indeed, it is. The numbers sure show that. Rob Bernstein, the CEO of Coupa, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
You bet.
All right, coming up right next on the Drill Down Podcast, we're going to have one number that tells us a whole lot, the Drill Down Bite, right after this.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. With Era, give yourself an information advantage. Connect directly to earnings calls and other investor events with live transcription and event intelligence. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And you can listen to the Drill Down Podcast on your smart speaker by saying, hey, Alexa, play the Drill Down Podcast, and you'll pick up right where you left off last.
And let us know what companies you think we should be drilling down on. Talk to us on Twitter and Instagram by following at Drill Down Pod, and connect with us directly at our website, bizpod.net.
We're back with the Drill Down Bite, that one number that tells us a whole lot. Coupa talked about their spend under management. You know, these statistics, Isaac, can be odd, but I think that sometimes they can be telling. In other words, they're usually statistics that they like to give out when they make a company look good, and they never give them out when they make a company look bad. But I do think this makes the company look like it's growing massively. So we talked to Rob about the spend under management at $3.6 trillion, a jaw-dropping number. Before the pandemic, and here's the bite, their spend under management was $1.7 billion. So the question was, can they grow during the pandemic? And they missed some numbers, and Wall Street didn't like it, and the growth rate slowed down. But their spend under management has grown by over 2,000% during the pandemic. That's going to be nothing but impressive for this company.
That is impressive. And can I tell you one thing about Coupa?
Please.
The first time I ever had Rob on one of my programs way back in the day was at our former employer, Bloomberg, before it was public. And I remember at the time, he was like a new kid on the block. Who's he had had a substantial venture raise, and but it was still kind of a tough sell to get him on the air within our confines and our metrics. But I really believed in this company, and I thought that this is a CEO to watch. And I gotta say, I'm patting myself on the back right now.
Well, we'll see what the earnings look like next quarter.
Yeah, we'll see what happens next week too.
So close to earnings. That company coming out with earnings fairly soon. Keep an eye on that one. Thank you for your time. We appreciate all of you listening to the show. I'm Corey Johnson. Isaac Webster is our executive producer. Our editor extraordinaire is Ben Wilson. The Drill Down's a production of the Business Podcast Network.